I'd like to, the panel to recognize all of those maybe here tonight who are in the audience tonight representing Naval Aviation. Maybe you would stand if you're here tonight. We want to congratulate and thank all of you for the service you provide to this country. And thank you for being a part of this tonight. Well, we're running a little short, or getting close to our time, so just ask each of you to maybe share one thing that you wanted to be sure to share tonight, and we'll leave about 5 minutes at the end for some questions and answers if we can. So, Connie, I'll start with you.
Well, let me talk about the Wright Flyer a little bit.
All right.
And one of the questions I get, why did you get to fly the Wright Flyer? Well, let me answer. It's simple. I'm about the same size as a Wright brother. I'm just a little bit shorter and lighter. At least I used to be lighter. It happens. I also had flown successfully a 1909 original Bolero, which is wing warping, so I'd flown powered wing warping. And there were several companies that built exact replicas of the Wright Flyer in 2003, and I was associated with Wright Brothers Aeroplane Company of Dayton, Ohio. Okay, yay. NASA put some instrumentation on our Wright Flyer, and they gave us that at 28 miles an hour was the stall speed, and 32 miles an hour was what I'll call the never exceed speed. So I had a very small envelope to fly in. And at 32 miles an hour, the hip cradle would become so stiff that even our strongest test pilot couldn't get it to move as it progressed past 32 miles an hour. Any more than a 20-25 degree angle of bank, it was unrecoverable. I discovered that through my hang gliding, which was my preparation for flying the 1902 Wright glider and then the Flyer, that it was basically a rhythm. And if you missed a beat, it was a do-over. My flight equaled that of Orville. I have four flights. The first flight equaled that of Orville Wright's first, the Wright brothers' first flight. Theirs was 120 feet and 12 seconds. Mine was 150 feet and 11 seconds. You're on your belly in a push-up position. Your hips are in a wooden cradle. Your feet are tucked on a wooden bar at the back so you don't slide off. Your left hand is on a wooden stick that operates the forward canard or control elevator. And by the way, if the Wright Flyer or the glider does stall, it's a parachute to the ground. It does not break and go in, which is a saving grace. Your right hand, when you're in that push-up position, is basically hanging on for dear life. That's about it, unless you want more.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Connie?
I'd like to take a moment to extend to the people here, if they don't know Peggy's background, that she is the founder of Women in Aviation. So to say the encouragement to all of you out there, you young ladies here in the front rows, if you are interested in aviation, you have a network of people to help you now, and that is very much because of Peggy Beatty and the Women in Aviation organization.
Chabria now.
I'm sorry, Peggy. I go back so far, it's Peggy Chabrin, excuse me. I go back so far that I know when Women in Aviation began, and the last name was different then. The Women in Aviation organization is like so many people now. They have made us aware of the opportunities, and it is about the opportunity. The interest may be there, but all of us here took advantage of those opportunities, but there are people that came before us that made a good pathway for us, and you have to be prepared, talking to you young ladies again, we have to be prepared, but you do have opportunities now, and there are a lot of people to help you, so don't be afraid to dream big.
Thank you. And I'm just going to add one thing. One of those ways to help, there are a lot of scholarships out there available to you through a lot of the aviation organizations, EAA, AOPA, and certainly Women in Aviation. So please check out the website and look for some of those scholarship opportunities. Kay.
Well, just to follow on with everything that's being said tonight, I'd like to just give you some encouragement and tell you that there are tremendous opportunities out there. They don't always immediately open up right in front of you. But if you're interested in aviation, I'm a little bit biased, but I would say the Navy and NASA both are great places for women in aviation. If you look at what we have done in the Navy, we first selected the first women to train as pilots in the Navy in 1973. At this time today, we have 350 women serving as naval aviators, as pilots in the Navy on active duty, and we have 250 naval flight officers. And we have even more women who are in supporting roles, aviation technicians, and all types of ratings to support the naval aviation. It's a great place to start and get that experience. Because in the Navy, there's at this time, it's only special warfare, the SEALs, that is the last remaining field that is not open to women. So we actually need your expertise, we need your brains, we need your muscles, and we need you to come join us in the Navy. And if the Navy's not your thing, NASA's another good place. A lot of people think that maybe, oh, NASA's all done at this point, and I would tell you we are not. Just last week, we happened to land the very last space shuttle. We launched 135 space shuttles, and that was done with a team of men and women, and it took each and every one of them to get those space shuttles safely launched through a successful mission and safely landed. And we've had, as you well know, male and female astronauts, and we will continue to have that. As a matter of fact, we have the International Space Station on orbit right now. We have six people on board, and they're conducting research over long periods of time. And they will stay up there. Each one of them stays up about 6 months. So we'll be continuing to support the International Space Station at least through the year 2020, and we expect further beyond. And even though we've retired the space shuttle, NASA is looking forward to reaching out again beyond low Earth orbit. So once again, on a bit of a recruiting tour, we need your brains. We need some fresh new ideas, and we need you to come join us to help be part of this team that's going to take us beyond low Earth orbit and eventually back to the moon and on to Mars. So consider these opportunities as you're looking at all the bright future ahead of you.
Thank you, Kay. Thank you. We have time, I think, for two, maybe three questions, so with all the lights, it's hard to see. Yes, ma'am.
What is astronaut training like?
The question is, what is astronaut training like?
Astronaut training is actually a combination of really fun, the coolest things you've ever done, and really hard. But it's really worthwhile. As a new astronaut, you come in, and especially now that the space shuttle is retired, we're training our astronauts for the International Space Station and eventually beyond. So we don't actually bring in very young people as astronauts. We need people to come in that already have a good bit of experience, especially flying experience, but other experience in their field. We have everything from test pilots to medical doctors. We've flown veterinarians and geologists, physicists, chemists. We have a wide range. The first thing is we start teaching them all the technical aspects of the International Space Station. You take a lot of Russian language and maybe some other language training, and you also get to train in the T-38. We get to keep up our flying skills with flying the T-38 jets. And just in general, working with a lot of our international partners. So it's a very busy time. It actually lasts many years. And again, like I said, it's very exciting and doing fun things, but it also takes a lot of dedication. Certainly worthwhile.
Thank you. Another question. Can you speak a little louder, please? Oh, where did the space shuttle land last time?
The space shuttle was designed to land on a runway. As a matter of fact, that was the first spacecraft ever to land on a runway. And that first happened back in 1981. The space shuttle typically would land at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida on a 10,000-foot long runway, but we could also land it at Edwards Air Force Base in California in case the weather was bad in Florida. And if it was in case of an emergency, we could land it on other runways, and typically we would like to try to find one that's closer to 10,000 feet long just to give us enough room to slow down. You know, we're flying at 17,500 miles an hour, so it takes us a little while to slow down.
Any questions from, I've been picking over here. Oh, okay.
How are you going to be getting to the International Space Station? Will you be going with the Russian mission in the future?
Okay, the question is, how do we get to the International Space Station? I just mentioned that it's going to be operating through 2020. Actually, several years ago now, we stopped flying crews to the International Space Station on the space shuttle. We have been flying to the space station for many years on the Soyuz rocket with the Russians. And so at any time, there are always, for the number of crew members on board, with six crew members on board, we have two Soyuzes attached to the space station. So that is how our crews get up there, and it's also how they get back, and it's their lifeboat. If something disastrous happens on board the space station, if we collide with something and have a big hole in the side of the space station and we can't keep pressurization and we have to abandon, or if we had a bad fire on board and we can't contain it, we can get into the space, the Soyuz, and come on home that way. So that's always ready for us.
Steve is running quickly with the microphone.
How was it like floating in the air?
I think we heard, what was it like going?
Floating in the air.
Floating.
What was it like floating in the microgravity environment of space? Well, when you first get there, by the way, I mentioned it takes only 8.5 minutes to get to orbit. And then we have to do an adjusting burn later to adjust our orbit to get into the right spot. And eventually we start to catch up with the International Space Station. But immediately, right at that 8.5 minutes, we're under about 3.5 G. And as soon as those main engines cut off, if we weren't strapped into our seats, we would immediately float out. And certainly anything loose at that time suddenly floats. And suddenly you're floating. And it's you no longer sense motion. Even though we're moving at just under 5 miles a second, it feels like you're floating in the middle of the deep end of the pool. You know, just that type of feeling where you just don't sense the motion, and you just have this just very peaceful kind of floating feeling.
Okay, thank you.
Will we ever see a space shuttle in our museum at Air Venture?
The question is, will we ever have a space shuttle here in the museum at Air Venture? Well, I'll tell you what, of the three space shuttle orbiters, it was quite some contention and it was quite a competition of where they were going to go. And the space shuttle Atlantis will remain in Florida at the Kennedy Space Center, and it'll be available to view at the visitor center there. The space shuttle Endeavour will be in Los Angeles, and the space shuttle Enterprise is actually going to move from the Smithsonian at the Hazy Museum there. It's going to go up to New York City, and the Space Shuttle Discovery will go to the Hazy with the space with the Smithsonian.
Home
there you
fly.
Go.
There you go. We have time for one more question. I think. Okay.
Which was the most difficult challenge to make women in aviation possible as an organization?
What was the worst challenge creating the organization? To Peggy, I believe.
Oh, me. The biggest challenge starting the organization. Well, started out, it was a conference that turned into an organization, and usually there's an organization that decides to have an annual convention. So we've kind of always been unconventional, I guess you'd say. no, sorry.
Peggy, could I answer
okay,
maybe?
All right.
I watched it develop from afar, and what I saw was that Peggy's organization and all the people involved, not that it was Peggy's organization, but the involvement there was about opportunity. It was not you owe me. So I think the support that she gained because of the attitude of the women involved was what made it so successful. So that wasn't really a challenge. That's not an answer to the question, but I think that's what really
I guess maybe in saying that, there were some people who wondered why the organization was starting and what we were all about, and you know, were we some big, you know, negative group, and never have been. It's just been trying to support involvement in aviation and encouraging others to be a part of it. So we do one last question. They said okay, then we've, and I know you're waiting to hear Bert Rutan next. Okay, one last one.
I'm kind of sorry that we've retired the shuttle program, and I know that there are reasons for it, but doesn't it cost us more to fly up with the Russians than it does to fly our shuttle up?
So the question is, the space shuttle is retired, and wouldn't it have been, is it cheaper to keep flying the space shuttle the way it is versus going and purchasing these rides with the Russians? It really depends on how you do your accounting. If you ever talk to an accountant, it depends on how you do your numbers. So I think you're going to see in the press, you'll see a lot of different answers to that question. But the fact is, the space shuttle was designed in the 1970s. And some of them were built in the 70s, and the Endeavour was built a little bit later. But, you know, we had a really good safety record with 135 space shuttle missions. We lost two. That's a pretty incredible thing for a vehicle that on the launch pad has 2.5 million moving parts. It is an incredibly complicated machine, and it's becoming more and more expensive every single year that goes by to continue to operate it. And it's like, did we really want to wait until we had our next accident and then retire it, or just go ahead and retire it? We really actually had hoped to have another vehicle to replace it at the time we retired it, but unfortunately, due to budgets and other issues, that didn't quite happen. So unfortunately, there's going to be a gap in time between the retirement of the space shuttle and the next time that we can launch a NASA spacecraft with astronauts on board. But I would tell you to stay tuned, because we have a very incredibly dedicated team, a very smart team, and we're going to get some of you come join us and tell us how to figure this out. And I'll say stay tuned, because we're going to come up with something even better.
I'm kind of sorry that we've retired the shuttle program, and I know that there are reasons for it, but doesn't it cost us more to fly up with the Russians than it does to fly our shuttle up?
So the question is, the space shuttle is retired, and wouldn't it have been, is it cheaper to keep flying the space shuttle the way it is versus going and purchasing these rides with the Russians? It really depends on how you do your accounting. If you ever talk to an accountant, it depends on how you do your numbers. So I think you're going to see in the press, you'll see a lot of different answers to that question. But the fact is, the space shuttle was designed in the 1970s. And some of them were built in the 70s, and the Endeavour was built a little bit later. But, you know, we had a really good safety record with 135 space shuttle missions. We lost two. That's a pretty incredible thing for a vehicle that on the launch pad has 2.5 million moving parts. It is an incredibly complicated machine, and it's becoming more and more expensive every single year that goes by to continue to operate it. And it's like, did we really want to wait until we had our next accident and then retire it, or just go ahead and retire it? We really actually had hoped to have another vehicle to replace it at the time we retired it, but unfortunately, due to budgets and other issues, that didn't quite happen. So unfortunately, there's going to be a gap in time between the retirement of the space shuttle and the next time that we can launch a NASA spacecraft with astronauts on board. But I would tell you to stay tuned, because we have a very incredibly dedicated team, a very smart team, and we're going to get some of you come join us and tell us how to figure this out. And I'll say stay tuned, because we're going to come up with something even better.
Some of these... Some of these young people out here are going to be sending us a postcard from Mars, don't you think?
There you go. Well, again, thank you very much, all of you, for being here tonight, being part of this special celebration, centennial of women earning their pilot's license. And thank you for all of you for coming, and good night. Thank you.
Good night.